What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
No, Mr. Big Voice Man. Happy New Year's Eve to you, by the way, Mr. Big Voice Man. No, it is myself, Reginald Adetula, and B. Scott in for John Lopez here in the loop on this New Year's Eve. Colin Neal on the ones and two in for one Figgy Fig, who I believe was listening earlier because he still loves Sports Radio 610.
Yes.
Even though he's taking the day. In fact, if you're still listening, go do something, man.
Yeah, but he can go do something and take us with him. That's the beauty of, as you mentioned at the top of the program, the fact that you can get involved with it however you like, whether that's in your car, whether that's on your app, whether that's on the YouTube or the Twitch chats. He can go have a great, wonderful New Year's Eve and still be locked in to In the Loop, which I hope he is, and I hope you remain.
Okay.
Whoever right. you are that's listening.
And it's a fair point.
We got well two more made, hours of the show. So
well
it.
Made by Brandon Scott.
Yeah.
And I will take that. I will heed it. This is neither here nor there, but I guess I just want to mention this while it's still front of mind. Something is in the water in New England, bro. It is not good. It is not good at all. As yet another New England Patriot has been accused of something for... I feel like they should not make this a trend that every day they have some level of allegations that you do not want. But what was it? Christian Barmore, defensive tackle, facing assault and battery charges in a domestic dispute.
Good God.
So, yeah, not good.
Can everybody just relax?
Just
calm the hell down.
It's the New
guys.
Year's, guys. Let's what's
No, but it is an uncomfortable reminder that, like, the holiday season, we always view it as, oh, man, it's a holly jolly time. Not always, right? Like, it can also go the other way. Not that I'm trying to, like, put that out there or anything, but...
Nah, people be wilding out in the holidays. You're right about that.
It is a reminder, right? It is a reminder in some ways, but yeah.
Allegedly.
Really, allegedly, and it's unfortunate that is the case. Anyways, let me bring it back home where thankfully that is not something that is a cause for concern at this moment. But we're finishing out the year, I think, strong in the 2025 season. And I think within this, the word finish matters a great deal because D'Amico Ryans has been the mantra all year long. Just finish games. And as they've gotten better at that, that has put them in a place where now they're going to the playoffs. They have a strong stand to be in the playoffs and maybe make a run. And I kind of wanted to look at the anatomy of the finish, B. Scott. Will you join me on this? Because I was going back through my notes, going back and looking at the early portions of the season and seeing what created their ability to finish and like where they started. And where they start was one, the very evident one. The offense was really bad.
Yes.
Like the offense was really bad. And some of it was like the Nick Haley and the offensive staff wasn't dialed into what players did well. And it was so obvious because all the preseason talk from Nick Haley when you hired him was we're going to do things that put players in position to be the best versions of themselves.
That's what they said.
And you want to know what the most visible instance of that dichotomy being there was versus Tampa Bay. Damian Pierce, who was still on the team at that point. You remember them? You remember
wow.
him? Pepperidge Farm remembers. Damian Pierce was, they were utilizing him. They were throwing him on toss plays. And I vividly remember Damian Pierce making mention this preseason that he don't really like toss plays. Like it's not really in his bag. It's not his wheelhouse. And I saw that. And I was like, oh, we're not in a good place.
To be fair though, with Damian Pierce, it seemed to get to a point to where he ain't really like no plays. Like, what were, by the end of it, and I love Damian Pierce, man, such a joy to be around. But by the end of it, what were exactly the optimal Damian Pierce plays? I don't know if they existed.
Kick returns?
I was going to say, especially, it's probably kick returns. I was going to say, especially with an offensive line that was trying to find itself. And you could argue still is.
That's also part of the inability to run the football consistently.
Yeah.
I think was also one of those things that you had to look at earlier in those games.
I mean, think about that as the, you know, with the red zone issues. What games were those, for getting off the top of my head, but, you know, the times when they tried to ram it in from, you know, two or three times in a row from you know, the 1 yard line or 2 yard line, and just couldn't do so because they could not move. They didn't have an offensive line that could move people. This is when I first came up with the take, or at least developed the take myself, that the Texans really only excel when they have the benefit of having the element of surprise. When it's clearly a passing down or clearly a running situation, which is what happens when the field shortens in the red zone, you kind of run out of options of what different types of things you're going to do. When you don't have that element of surprise, this team did not this team was not good enough, offensively at least, was not good enough to just beat you despite the fact that you knew what was coming, right? Like the anti-Philadelphia Eagles, right? Tush push coming, or they were getting ready to run the ball. You might know it. Their playbook ain't that complicated. You know kind of what they're going to do, but they're so damn good at executing it, and their players are excellent, that it didn't matter that you knew it. The Texans did not have that benefit. They had to do their work on first and second down when you couldn't necessarily get a beat on what they were doing. You knew they were running the ball. You could bow up because they weren't going to move you off the line.
And some of that was because of some of the ways that the offensive line was situated. Remember, early on in the season, they also did not find the answer there. And it was somewhat to be expected that the answer would not be fully solidified early, but it shouldn't have looked the way that it did. Remember, we were having conversations all through training camp where it was like, have they settled on the offensive line yet? Are they settling on the offensive line yet? And even the deadlines that they were setting, like Caserio on with Payne and Pendergast, as he is periodically throughout the season and the year, was like, yeah, we hope to by next week, right, have a good idea. And they were still shifting stuff. We're like, hold on. So when are you going to find out? And it became very evident that they didn't find out until well into the season what the offensive line was actually, with Lakin Tomlinson playing left guard and Cam Robinson. Actually, in the first game, it wasn't even that. Remember, they had to do the shuffle that everybody got very mad about, having Ariante Ursa remove around and everything. Right. There was a lot, level of disheveledness on the offensive line that was not going to allow them to be their best selves. And then I think the third thing offensively that counteracted their ability to finish: penalties.
Yeah, I forgot about that one, man.
Here's the give, and they blow the play dead.
Yeah.
Looks like a false start.
Yeah, that's kind of their thing. Kind of their thing, the penalties. And whenever we would ask about it, like, what does the offense – we need to play cleaner. We need to not beat ourselves, which, you know, brought us to this point of, like, what is this offense? This is literally the – it wasn't just something that they needed to correct, but it was also a key strategy and approach in their offense. It's like, what is this offense? One that doesn't beat itself. One, again, like I mentioned yesterday and have mentioned throughout the week, one that possesses the ball. Well, it's hard to do that and in a positive way when you're pushing yourself back, right? Penalties. Okay, you're pushing yourself back. Well, now you're making it harder for on the next down, and now you're going to probably give the ball away. And you're not a prolific enough offense to make up for. And they actually ended up kind of showing some of this in the Davis Mills time. But they weren't good enough at that time, at least earlier on in the season, to make up for, to excel in spite of themselves, to make up for their own mistakes in that way. So they figured that part out, so, at least a little bit.
I feel like those are the offensive things that made them not good at finishing. And those are the things, some of those things are the things that have helped them now in the, you know, that they have changed these in a decent amount, made them better at finishing. The offensive line, they have found what I think works for them. With obviously Tay's stash at left tackle. It's funny because they've had to move this around a little bit and they've managed to keep this going, but with having Jake Andrews in at center, as much as I still look at him and I see him get blown back, it is working for communication and what have you elsewhere there. It is working well enough. Ed Ingram has been the star of the offensive line.
I agree.
At least when it comes to expectation relative to what he actually did.
And doggedness.
Yes, he is a tough son of a gun.
Yes. And I'll even say Andrews, who gets pushed back, he's not very good. He does have heart. I'll give him that. He's just not, to your
point. What a backhanded compliment, but I love it.
The man's got heart.
It ain't about the size of the dog in the fight. It's about the size of the fight in the dog.
That's right. That's right.
He is the ultimate that.
Defense is the place where it got the most interesting, I think. When it's funny because closing, I think, and all year long, it's been how much can you blame the defense, whatever. But I think early on, closing was somewhat a defense issue.
Yeah, I mean, we did this when they released C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and I think he was kind of maybe a
somewhat unfairly singled out because it was easy. It was just kind of easy and convenient to do with the guy on his way out the door. But that dude did give up some plays that were costly early on in the season.
You think create problems that then created chain links that had.
Yeah, literally from the start of the season, you go back to the Rams game and all the way through the Bucks game, the Jaguars game before he gets released. Like there are moments there, and it did get cleaner once he was gone. So I will point that out. But yeah, no, I think defensively, you know, you think back to, you know, we talked about how mobile quarterbacks hurt this defense, right? Baker Mayfield and Henry Toa, not to single him out, but not being able to get enough of a hand on Baker Mayfield late in that game that allowed them to do what they did. Bo Nix was somebody that was able to make some plays despite that offense not looking very good in that game. And the Texas defense had a lot to do with that. But yeah, no, as great as the defense is and has been for the totality of the season, it is easy to forget how soon we forget these moments, these lapses here where it wasn't quite good enough or was the reason why they weren't quite good enough.
And it's fair to make the argument that the offense failed the defense in having them out there so often for those instances.
It is fair.
But if we're breaking this down, we're doing the anatomy of the finish for this Texans team. I think you highlighted some of these. One of those was bad defensive line contain. And I feel comfortable saying bad defensive line contain because early on in the season, one of the things that felt very evident was I was looking at how is Will Anderson Jr. going to progress? And I was looking at this pass rush wise. I was like, oh man, this is going to go to a whole nother level. And I think that might have hampered them in some ways. Tell me if you think I'm wrong here, B. Scott, because I think they were so focused on getting forward that then contain became the issue. Maybe not as much with Matt Stafford himself, but week two with Baker Mayfield.
Definitely with Baker Mayfield, yeah.
Picking up that 4th-and-10, taking 17 yards, keeping that drive going, and ultimately going and scoring the game-winning touchdown there. Jacksonville, this happens as well. You mentioned Bo Nix. Like, this happens. It wasn't until, and I think that the person who I like putting the hat on here is Sheldon Rankins. I think that what they realized was, one, the defense, your edges have to be better in contain and not getting too far deep, not giving that quarterback an opportunity to step forward and escape forward.
And they have been,
exactly.
Yeah.
But I think also some of that was when that quarterback rolls out and gets beyond that edge, your defensive tackle also has to come in now, be that secondary pursuit guy that's not going to allow the cornerback to turn the edge. And it's so frequently number 90 with the awareness of, oh, I see a screen is coming and I'm going to get out here. I see that guy is about to get out. I need to go and contain. And I think that those are the things that have helped them really reel this in. And the secondary on the backside being able to cover, that comes back into play when that quarterback is still having to keep his eyes downfield because you're not going to go and just pick it up with your legs.
We did a thing during the break of how did the bargain binging go for the Texans this offseason? And we were looking more so on the offensive side of the ball, but probably the most, I feel comfortable saying this, the most underrated signing was bringing back Sheldon Rankins.
Agreed.
I think that is something that for the most part flew under the radar. And then also like the interior defensive line. And this is even to the point that you're making about, you know, how they, you know, the containment issues still looked at as a weakness of the team or a weakness of the defense, especially. And just quite frankly, has not been so as expected. And I think in large part because of Sheldon Rankins and his savviness, steadiness, leadership, and understanding these exact things that you're talking about.
So there's that. Can I interest you in tackles?
Oh, yeah. They were
missed. They were missing a lot of tackles early.
Yeah. They are sporadic with that even still. Like it happened against the Raiders, I feel like. Or the Raiders card in one of those
two
games.
No, it definitely was. Definitely Raiders.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a thing that comes up from time to time, oddly enough, with them.
But they were missing him more consistently.
Yes.
And that's the reason why D'Amico Ryans didn't sound all too enthused after the Raiders game, because I imagine in his mind, he's like, hey, man, I thought we fixed this. But it's a ever-present, you have to continue harping on that to make sure it goes. And then one of the things that I thought was most interesting as I was looking at the anatomy of the finish for these Texans, they used to be really bad at stopping the run early on in the year.
Very early on in the year, yeah. They were not good at it. They have now been good at it for long enough that it's easy to forget about it. Like, I want to say the first 3 weeks of the season.
First 3 weeks of the season, they were 27th in rushing success rate allowed. 27.
Even worse than I thought. Even worse than I remember. So
they are significantly better than that now. All of these things they've managed to turn around. The question that I wanted to ultimately get to here is this team is a finishing team. They run the ball sufficient enough, and especially in those moments where they need to. The penalties have largely dissipated, especially offensively, I think, interestingly enough. Nick Haley has done a much better job at putting guys in the positions that they need to be in moments. You've got in-breakers happening, and there's still places for development there. Defensively, they contain. They tackle. They stop the run.
Yes.
They turn the ball over as well, which wasn't happening as much early on in the season. Is there anything more? Like, they have been really good at finishing, and maybe this is a greedy thought. Is there a place where they could finish better or they could do something better to help their finishing efforts?
Well,
because I think that's the thing that'll put them in a place where you go, oh, they're undeniable in the postseason.
Dare I say open up the offense just a little bit in the second half?
Is there a reasonable place where they could continue to?
What's so damn unreasonable about that? And I'm saying this is somebody that has grown to accept the state of affairs, if you will. Like, I get the logic in what they're doing. Not saying that I agree with it or love it, but I certainly understand it. Like, this defense has shown you enough for you to lean into that being your identity. But I feel like that is the place to kind of do a little bit of that, do a little bit more of that foot on the gas and not foot on the brake once you have developed the lead or feel comfortable with where you are in the game. That's the thing that it still feels like they don't necessarily do. And I feel like they'll have to do or will be more necessary for them in the playoffs.
I just don't know exactly how that shows up. You know what I mean? I think that the ability to maintain the football, right, and pick up third downs and not have as many three and outs, although they do still have those, especially in lulls that are frustrating, but be able to extend drives, keeps the defense off the field and keeps them in places where they can finish. They can, you know, snuff out games. I don't know how then you take that and you go, all right, because I guess I need to ask the question of what do you mean when you say open up the offense? Is it more chunk plays and more opportunities to get your yards quickly?
More aggressive game plan in the second half that is similar to what we saw early in that Chargers game or early in other games that we've watched them play. You know, it seems like the Bills game was an example of how people felt that way. Like and I actually disagreed with some of that. I thought there were reasons why they took their foot off the gas a little bit that were much more rational than people gave it credit for. But point still being the same of, hey, lean into it a little bit. Play with a little bit more swag coach with a little bit more swag and confidence, particularly on the offensive side of the ball.
Is it weird that I don't know how much I trust that, because I think that in that attempt, you might give up some of the ground that you've gained in finishing.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's going to happen. You're just asking me what I think they should do. That's what I would go with. I think the formula that we've seen is the formula that they're going to go with for better and or worse.
But the fact of the matter is they've tightened pretty much all the lug nuts on the finish tire in this tortured metaphor that I've thrown out here.
Yeah.
And here they are as we are finishing 2025, a finishing team in the National Football League, one of the better ones that I think that you could look at.
Yeah, it's the reason why I've actually grown to be comfortable with their conservative name, because they have learned how to finish, right? It's the reason why I have been kind of shoulder shrugging at how pitiful the offense can be at times, because they do seem to know how to finish games. And I've said that I'm okay with them starting out hot, doing their work early, especially if they can finish, and it looks like they've been able to do so and learned how to do so.
You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, we'll do our lunchtime confession.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sometimes it's sports, sometimes it's not. Whatever it is, Reggie and John are keeping it real. It's In the Loop's Lunchtime Confessions, presented by the Men's Clinic on Sports Radio 610.
Watch this. These are my confessions. I have been very careful, and I've been very careful to ignore something. I think we all do this in our life. You know, you look at that garbage that's supposed to go out and you like, if I don't look at it, I cannot take it out for another day. You know, something like that, right? If I just ignore that this thing is happening, if I ignore that little knock that's happening, I don't have to take this car to the shop. And in a similar way, I've been carefully ignoring the fact that Tyler Shuck has been really good in New Orleans.
I could see why you would do that.
Because I hated him as a prospect. I hated him as a college quarterback.
You
at Louisville,
hated him?
I thought he stunk. I thought he was really bad.
I thought he wasn't actually that bad. I thought up in Louisville with Jeff Brom. I mean, he's old. He was old for a prospect.
And wasn't he
at Tech before that? Right, Texas Tech before that.
Yeah.
That's how I got to know him. I thought he was fine.
Not only was he there, so he was at Tech, he was at Oregon, and then he was at Louisville, right? Like that's the track.
Wasn't he at Oregon when Bo Nix was there?
No, they were not there at the same time. They were not there at the same time. But Bo Nix is a part of a cautionary tale for me now, I think, because I be looking at some of these dudes and I'm like, I don't know that you're actually good. I think you're just older than the rest of these kids. And now you look up, you go, Bo Nix looked viable. I don't know if he's good, but he's looked viable as a quarterback. Tyler Shuck, looking like he might be offensive rookie of the year in the National Football League. And I'm like, damn. Because if you listen to this program and you've heard me talk, especially during the draft process, the one dude quarterback-wise that I was willing to get really loud about, puff my chest out about, it's like, well, one thing I know, Tyler Shuck stinks. Apparently not. And I have just 17 weeks of football of me just going, not looking over there. Although he didn't start at the start of the season, but you get what I mean. Like, all the way through the season, as he was playing football, I was just like, not going to look over there because I'm just going to wait to be right. And apparently it has not come yet. I'm still holding out hope. I'm not willing to say that he's a good quarterback, but he's looked really good early.
Yeah, and he's also... So his selection was also the moment where I started checking up on the whole Shedeur Sanders thing in the draft. So I was like, okay, once we got to Tyler Shuck, I was like, okay, I don't want to lean into the conspiracy theories. And I think like wild things are happening around this conversation. But Tyler Shuck, word, really? Like, I'd rather just roll the dice on Shedeur Sanders. You know, I'd rather just sell the Sanders jerseys over the Tyler Shuck experience. So you can keep that and give me Shedeur, but objectively speaking, Tyler Shuck so far. And I know the Browns have won some games with Shedeur. There's a conversation being had there about that and where they go and how they handle the future. But objectively, Tyler Shuck better than Shedeur Sanders so far.
Yeah, Ben Solak of ESPN put together a all-rookie NFL team for this year. His first team, obviously, is Cam Ward, who, again, a number one overall pick has never been so disregarded and not talked about as Cam Ward, it feels like. Second team, Tyler Shuck, who's, like, absolutely been fantastic. In fact, speaking of that, they played this weekend, the Titans and the Saints, and, of course, the Tyler Shuck's New Orleans Saints. He's just... poised, creative. He's executed the offense. He's moved on from mistakes really well. It looks pretty good. And I guess the secondary confession is I am still plotting on his downfall because if there's anything I enjoy more than anything is being right.
You want to be right.
And I am
still on your own correctness.
And here in a year or two, when in my mind it is proven that was just a good rookie season and not a good quarterback, I'll be like never wrong, just early.
Yeah.
But for the time being, I think I have to acknowledge. Might have been wrong. Might have been loud and wrong in this moment. These are my
confessions. Bringing this back from earlier, we led the show with this, but it is confession worthy. I want the Ravens. I want the Ravens. Give me the Ravens as the Texans' first round or first opponent in the postseason, in the playoffs. I do not believe in this version of the Ravens. Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry as a combination does still worry me, does still give me a certain level of concern. There is respect there. I do get it. But I want whatever is best for this offense that if we're just all being honest about, none of us really and truly believe in. But I believe in them more against the Ravens than I do against the Steelers. And so my confession is, that I have graduated from simply give me either one of these from simply, hey, I can see the argument from both sides. I'm no longer both sidesing this thing. I am picking a side and give me the Ravens. I know that's kind of the irrational take for a lot of Texans fans who have the Ravens PTSD and understand the
you know, the nuances of why they were able to blow them out earlier in the year. No Lamar Jackson, obviously, but I'm still in that place. My confession, I want the Ravens. Give it to me.
You're not by yourself. You're not alone. 832, B-Scott wants all the smoke. I want all the smoke. Bring on the Ravens. Like, people are with you.
I ain't scared. I'm just not. I am not afraid of this team. Derrick Henry, you know, I get it. But like I mentioned earlier in the show, the Texans have shown an ability not just to defend the run, but also to defend Derrick Henry. And I just don't think that this is as good of a Ravens team. It's obviously not as good of a Ravens team as the one that's beat you like a drum over the last couple of years.
From the 8-3-2, a win over the Ravens does more for team confidence than the Steelers. I actually strongly disagree with that. And it's not that the Steelers does more. I think they don't give a damn. I think that they have gotten into the place where they no longer, the lion does not concern himself with the opinions of sheep. I think that's where the Texans exist.
Yeah, I think that the thing that the Texer is talking about, I feel like that happened, if it happened at all, I think that happened at Kansas City a few weeks back. You know what
I
mean?
Like, they clearly had circled that one on the schedule. Like, sometimes people are like, oh, no, that's nobody's circling things on the schedule. No, the Texans, they circled that one.
Yeah, the team that's already handled business against the Bills and the Chiefs definitely feels like, and of course, did beat the Ravens. I don't think they're going to do all those qualifiers that we're doing about
the JV Ravens.
Hurt. Yeah, I think they'll take it. And they did that up there, right? So the team that did that, I don't think is going to be surprised at all if they were to handle business against the Ravens in the playoffs. And I'm even to the point, again, back to my confession, to where I want it. That's what I'm now rooting for, unlike I think a lot of people who feel differently, who probably trust them more against Pittsburgh.
So do y'all fellas, I don't know if y'all probably did and not any, and they don't, y'all don't anymore. Y'all play 2K, NBA 2K?
I have retired from 2K.
I have retired. You know what is so funny? This even could have been a confession. I bought 2K for my son. Who was it, last year or the year before? Either way, I bought 2K and Madden for my son with the intention of playing it with him. I think we have played both all of one time, like one each. I've played one once, 2K and Madden, with my son since I bought it for him,
at least
a year ago.
I would like to pretend it's because I don't have time. I used to, with my little brother, because, you know, they play 2K a particular way. 2K has a style of basketball. I'm like, man, I could beat you just by knowing basketball.
Yeah,
doing good things.
Yeah.
When I started realizing that I couldn't, I was like, you know what?
The hell with this.
I don't need to do this.
The game cheating.
That was one of the early portions of, oh, I am getting older, when I'm sitting here playing the video game and I'm like, wait, how'd you do that? Wait.
What'd I press?
It's not ethical basketball. It's not real basketball.
It's not.
Anyway,
Don't nobody pass out like this. Don't nobody dribble drive, step back three. Nobody does this.
Yeah. How does DeAndre Ayton look like Nikola Jokic?
How is Shaquille O'Neal hitting three pointers? Anyway, I digress. So I play with my friends all the time. You know, I'm a PlayStation guy, you know, hop into PlayStation Party. Man, I gotta confess, even when I do mess up and make them mad, I love hearing my friends get mad sometimes.
Oh yeah,
it is so hilarious.
Do we ever age out of that as dudes? Like, make the love language of dudes is annoying their friends. Why is that the case?
Yeah, I don't know if we age out of it individually, but I can vividly remember last night. I'm in my son's room. I'm just kind of in there hanging out. I'm doom scrolling, just chilling, and he's on the video game playing with somebody, and whoever the kid is on the other side is like cussing, you know, and my son is 10 and they're just talking trash to each other. My son obviously knows not to cuss with me sitting right there,
because he's a young Southern.
Yeah, exactly.
Boy, yeah,
but I shut them all down. I say, hey man, more playing and less talking. and for one thing, all of y'all sounded like some, and I used a word that I shouldn't use here.
Thank you. I appreciate your censorship.
But yeah. So you don't maybe do it yourself, but then you hear your understudy do it and you shut him down a little bit.
Okay.
I did do that yesterday.
All right. So yeah, you definitely somebody's daddy. Like, if anybody had any doubts.
Quit all of that. And I only really did it because the other little boy was cussing, but I don't know who that kid is, and I can't really, I'm not necessarily the boss of him.
Who says?
But since he's talking to my
son.
That's
what's wrong with society. We used to be able to parent other people's children.
Hey, I tell you what, he heard me. Because when I told my son to be quiet, I said, all of y'all need to be quiet. I ain't hear nothing no more.
There you go. Yeah. That is big daddy coded.
Well, it's like they tell me to stop balance passing with my 6'11 power forward. And I'm like,
oh, you was just rage baiting.
No, I just sometimes just do it for the hell of it. If it's not the most logical thing to do, I just do it for the hell of it. And then Stop doing that. Quit it.
Do it for the plot, man.
I just do it for you know, I just like hearing my
for the thrills.
Get mad. Yes, yeah, there you go.
Do it for the thrills.
B. Scott, because someone on the YouTube mentioned that, you know, dudes annoying our friends and spouses. Do you play that game? With your lady?
I don't think that's a great idea. That's not a good idea.
Because I feel like friends is easy.
Not on purpose.
Oh, so yeah. So the answer is no.
Not on purpose.
Then, like, the answer is no.
Even late into last night, my girl and I were having a conversation, and I was just asking a few too many questions. She was like, "You're asking too many questions." And I was like, "All right, I get it." But so it wasn't on purpose, but I was definitely annoyed because I was not satisfied with the answers I was getting. So I
yeah, but
so
you know the difference between
more questions to ask.
You know the difference. What I'm asking for is the answer is no, because I guess that game does not go well in your household.
Well, no, because I mean, ultimately, well, I don't know if I want to go down there.
Anyway,
route,
I don't
you
worry.
Understand?
Don't worry.
Certain things are undefeated.
That is correct.
And so you're not going to try to defeat them.
That's right.
Or be defeated.
That's
yourself.
Right. That's right. That is what we call situational awareness.
Yes.
All right. You are in
preservation.
The loop. That is your lunchtime confessions here in the loop. On Sports Radio 610, a happy New Year's Eve to all of you who are rocking with us on this Wednesday. Happy New Year's Eve, especially to anybody that's going to head out to the Buffalo Wild Wings in New Canaan to hang out with The Drive. It'll be Luke Morrow in with Clint Sterner. Coming up next, though, usually it's a college football on a Tuesday, but because the college football playoff second round starts tonight, we do college football on a Wednesday. What are we feeling when it comes to the college football playoff getting started today? And a few other notes. We'll do those next.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610 on a New Year's Eve edition of the program. Reginald Adetula, B. Scott in for John Lopez and Colin Neal in for the one figgy fig. Hope you're having a good day to this point. Hope that you will continue to have a good day. And if you keep it locked on Sports Radio 610, I'll guarantee it. How about that? How about that?
I like it.
Yeah, can you take that? Also, one of the reasons why you should have a good day is if you are a listener of Sports Radio 610, I imagine you're a football fan. And if you're a football fan, this is a great football day.
It is. It is a great football day. I have been waiting for this. Like, the first round of the college football playoff was a bit of a dud. It was a bit of a disappointment. I feel like this is when it actually kind of gets ramped up and you can really sit down with it. With your cold one or however it is you consume a game and really, really enjoy it with some level of expectation that said expectation will be met, right? That the playoff feel will actually be there. It wasn't there in the first round. But, I mean, even starting with, starting with today.
The Cotton Bowl. Cotton Bowl is that tonight? No, that's tomorrow.
Wait, yeah, yeah.
I didn't gotten myself all twisted up immediately. You have your four games that are all bowl games.
I'm just thinking Ohio State, Miami, which is today, right?
That is tonight.
Yeah, so like that is a game to me has a chance to be one of the better games that we'll get for the entire playoff, I think. I think it'll be one where, you know, so for the Buckeyes, I think that they have been hardly tested. You know, their biggest test, you might even argue, was, you know, either Indiana or, you know, Texas to start the season. But outside,
it's probably Indiana.
It's Indiana. But yeah. I mean, outside of those two games, it hasn't really been much. And I think this is going to be the closest thing that they'll have to that outside of those two games. And so how they respond to that, and especially with, I think Miami has an ability to kind of wreck the game with its pass rush. I still think
they got those two pass rushers that are tough.
Yeah, it's going to be that in and of itself might be the Buckeyes' biggest test yet. But I think they are equipped to handle it and that they'll still make enough plays to win this game. But it'll be an interesting one to watch. I wouldn't just pencil in Ohio State going to the next round. Just like that, but just because they've had such a dominant season.
Yeah, it is the Cotton Bowl Classic, AT&T Stadium tonight.
Okay, so that is the cotton.
Yeah, right. That is the quarterfinal that you have tonight. And mind you, you've got college football already on right now. Iowa versus Vanderbilt has been going on. Arizona State, Duke is happening. You have a huge one in Michigan versus Texas.
Yeah.
That'll be very interesting to watch. Nebraska, Utah will also be interesting because Utah, I don't know what Utah is doing. Actually, I know that they will not have Kyle Whittingham, 21-year right. head coach there.
Right, right.
So what does that new era look like? But of course, the big thing that I think everybody's interested in is Miami, Ohio State. One thing that's worth noting, Ryan Day is taking over play calling, right? He originally came in as an offensive guy there anyways, but as the head coach, he is, you know, allowed his offensive coordinators as recently, remember last, not this this season, but the year prior, Chip Kelly was there.
Yeah.
Brian Hartline eventually ascended into that role. He is taking over the University of South Florida job.
Right.
And so Ryan Day is stepping in at this late juncture in the season. That is a very interesting change to have for a playoff team. This isn't this is happening now. You're having him take over this job. This offensive play calling job. So I think that is going to be an interesting change here to see, are there any small nuances that change would happen here? Because you're going to need to be on your P's and Q's to get this win against Miami.
It's especially interesting for me because it's not like, you know, it's not like he's replacing some schmucks. I understand he's the head coach, but he's had really good offensive coordinators. I mean, Chip Kelly was able to make a lick off of it in the NFL, got fired promptly, but got his money. And then, you know, the Brian Hartline thing that you mentioned, too, he was good enough to get a job, you know, and I think there's more than just, you know, the offensive side, but like the relationship building and the recruiting and all of that, I think also factors into his success. You can hear C.J. Stroud or any of the Ohio State guys that are in the league now talk about him in that way. But yeah, it's not just that Ryan Day is stepping into that role, but it's the fact that he's stepping into that role for guys that have excelled in that role.
Yeah. By the way. Speaking of Chip Kelly, he becomes interesting because he returns to the Big Ten and not in no place that you would normally expect. He has been named the offensive coordinator at Northwestern.
How about that?
Go Wildcats.
I would have imagined that in him returning to college football, that maybe he would do the thing where he goes and gets the head coach job. But it seems very much that Chip Kelly has figured that he wants his lot in life to be, I want to do the things that I enjoy.
Yeah.
I could take the big job or I could take the job that I actually want to do. Because remember, he was the head coach at UCLA.
Yeah.
And then decided, I would rather not do this coaching thing at this level that is annoying to me. I'd rather just go be an OC at a good team.
Yeah.
Now he's at the OC at a team that not so good at this moment in Northwestern. But it feels very much like that is an acknowledgement to some degree that Chip Kelly is just like, I would like to coach offense.
This is, to me, the definition of range. To go from Ohio State, all right, national championship Ohio State, to an actual NFL team. Okay, so that's like stepping up. And then you go way below a notch all the way down to Northwestern. I mean, this is range to me. Ohio State, NFL, Northwestern, that is somebody that doesn't have a type. He is Ray Shremmert of – he is the Ray Shremmert of
– college football coaches?
I was just going to say a football play calling. Football at large play calling.
That tickles me to no end. How do you see this Cotton Bowl going between Ohio State and Miami? Miami really is probably going to want to get the I mean, you saw that game against A&M. Like that was not a high-flying game, and it's going to be just as difficult against Ohio State, I imagine. I feel like Miami is going to be doing a lot of trying to get the ball out to Malachi Toney in the flats.
Should. As they should.
And I feel like Ohio State is well situated to go up and blow that up. So can you run the football? What are you going to be able to do here? I think I lean very much towards Ohio State in this game.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think that what you said is spot on. Miami is going to lean into the Malachi Toney aspect of things, and that the pass rush that I mentioned earlier is going to be the ultimate challenge for Ohio State. But I do think that they're going to be able to make enough plays and be able to hold the pass rush at bay just enough to make enough plays and win this game.
Do you feel like we should fully college football on a Wednesday it up? You want to talk about the games on New Year's Day?
Yeah, I'm down with it.
All right, so New Year's Day, you have a three-peat of games, starting with what might be the most interesting game to me, number 4 Texas Tech versus number 5 Oregon. That's the Orange Bowl, Capital One Orange Bowl. That starts at 11 a.m. I think the big question in this game is who wins on the offensive line? The trenches is the game here.
Yeah, the offensive line, and I would even say even more broadly, that this is going to be one of those, at least I anticipate, because I thought this about the U of H LSU game that it would be more of a defensive struggle. That turned out to be a shootout. So I was all the way wrong about that. But this game, I think even more so, is going to be about how many explosive plays are these offenses able to make against objectively elite defenses between both Texas Tech and Oregon. I think it's going to be a rough day at the office, or I anticipate at least that it would be a rough day at the office for both offenses. I lean toward and side with the team that I think has the better quarterback in Oregon and Dante Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm going to go with. Even though I can acknowledge that this is one that could certainly go either way. I think it's a 2.5-point spread. This is literally like a pick 'em.
Yeah.
So I think you were spot on in how you introduced this. This will be, to me, the most interesting and at least from a chess match standpoint, I think this will be the most interesting game we'll see over the weekend.
I think I'm actually going to go the other way. I think I'm going to go Texas Tech, but it's the same thought process, and it's very narrow. I think the Tech has had a lot of these games where they've had to come up against talented, big teams. I think they've done the good job of establishing both sides of the lines, and I think Oregon, I always credit them for building SEC-type size. I don't think you're wrong in the Dante Moore portion of this. I know Oregon is dealing with, they've dealt with some injuries in their wide receiving core. So I think I'm leaning towards Texas Tech. I think that this is their time. So go ahead and make it happen. But I think this very much is a pick 'em of sorts.
And I'll also say, I'll add this. I think the winner of this game is very much capable of winning it all.
Mm.
I do believe that. And maybe that's more of a point about the field than, or just as much a point about the field as it is these two teams, or which either team emerges out of the two of them. But I think this is a sort of a quasi-national championship type of game because both teams are actually capable of winning it all, I believe.
Number one, Indiana. Number nine, Alabama. The Rose Bowl, Pasadena. Thursday, tomorrow, 3 p.m., God's time. I think that this is so fascinating because this is a brand college football fan, or are you a sicko? Because if you're a brand college football fan, you look at it and you go, The Alabama, the SEC, Indiana, well, I know how this goes, except that's kind of how you feel is kind of the exact opposite. Indiana has a lot of talented players, maybe more NFL caliber talent players, and Alabama is the team where I wonder at times if they have they have talent, don't get me wrong, NFL talent all the way as well, but are they putting it together in the way that a typical Alabama with the discipline that Kurt Cignetti clearly has his Indiana team working with? It almost, to me, looks kind of like an NCAA tournament game where Indiana has a lot of dudes that have been in the program, at least JMU through Indiana, that are well conditioned in what happens. And Alabama is kind of a little bit more of this hodgepodge of team put together that can high fly at times, but are they going to do it in this circumstance?
It almost feels like they have reversed, like if you're a sicko, or let me change that. If you are a brand college football fan, it's kind of a mind bleep because exactly what you just laid out and described seems like it should be on the other side. Traditionally, you would think that all of the discipline and stability that you apply to Indiana, you would normally apply to Alabama. It's almost like as if they have reversed roles. I'm riding with Indiana in this game.
This is the one that I'd put money on if I was a betting man, Indiana over Alabama. And it's not that Alabama can't do it. Kalen DeBoer has an Alabama team that is capable at any time of jumping out and getting you. I don't think they can run the ball worth a bleep, which is crazy to think about an Alabama team.
Yeah, that is crazy to think. And they've got a really good running back. But, I think against Indiana specifically, that Indiana is equipped. I think at this point, done being skeptical and being the traditionalist that just can't believe that Indiana is this good at football. No, they are. They just simply are. So that's where we are now.
And then the final of these is going to be the Sugar Bowl tomorrow evening, 7 p.m. Georgia, Ole Miss. How you feel about this?
Georgia. I think Ole Miss is dealing with the
losing the coach and all the assistants and all that.
This is one of the few times where I will at least lean into the distraction part of it that I think is a kind of a lazy narrative. Usually when it's applied, I think it'll fit here. And Georgia is Georgia. So I'm going to go with Georgia in this one.
Plus Kirby. It feels like Kirby is the dude who's like, I can get my team to lock in when I need to.
Yes.
And this feels like the time where you do that. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. You know what? It's a Wednesday. I don't care that it's New Year's Eve. Let's give something away. Caller number 3, make it quick, will win a $50 gift card to Texas Star Grill Shop. The caller will also be entered for a chance to win a Traeger Woolridge Elite Grill and a case of OG sauce at the end of football season, which is coming up. So call number 3-713-572-4610. Win that Texas Star Grill Shop gift card. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Rail 610. Coming up next, New Year's Eve is the day. Let's set some resolutions. What are your New Year's resolutions for the Houston sports teams, the major sports teams? Myself and B. Scott will set those up, and we'll do that next.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Reign. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.